Hi, my name's Liz. I qualify myself as not only a compulsive overeater, but I've also been anorexic, but for the most part I'm bulimic, a recovering bulimic. It's lovely to be here, thank you. Thanks for inviting me, thanks for the tea, the coffee and the service. Just to kind of qualify myself, I took my first compulsive bite at the age of 19 and I was a compulsive overeater. I binged at every opportunity and I compulsively ate for a long, long time. Round about my 20s, I became anorexic. But for the most part, I have been bulimic. I'm also an addict to laxatives. So you could say I'm a bit of a drug addict as well. To this day, I don't know why I took that bite. I don't know what made me take that bite. But what I have found out is that over the years, there's been like a pattern. And I remember when I first came into OA and they described the threefold illness part of the of this disease. And it was the mental obsession, the physical craving, physical allergy, and the spiritual malady or the kind of spiritual darkness. And I never really knew what that meant. But as I've got more and more into OA, I've started realising about looking back over my own life. It's like the mental upset. I would also describe myself as a compulsive overthinker. And that was, the first bite started off in my head. And it was things like I always thought of myself as not as good as other people. I never quite fitted in, even right from school. I didn't fit in. I didn't have any particularly bad upbringing. My upbringing was normal and things like that. And, but I didn't quite fit in. It was always the kind of like round peg in a square hole kind of thing. And I didn't like that because I compared myself to other people. Even within my own family, I come from a big family and there's a lot of cousins. And my cousins, my female cousins, quite a lot of female cousins. And my cousins were almost more glamorous than me. They were prettier than me, and I always thought they were thinner than me. And I used to compare myself to them all the time. I used to get jealous of them. And I used to think these were these perfect cousins, because what was actually happening was that I was going off and I was pigging out. I was binging, I was compulsively eating. My eating behaviours, once I had picked up, once the thing had got in my head, I had that switch that just took me to that first bite. And I, one of the things that really struck me was the amount of self-loathing I felt. I had such a hatred of myself. I didn't like what I looked like. I didn't like, I was too short, I was too this, I was too that. And it was always comparison, always comparison. And it took me to a real place of self-hatred. I really hated who I was and what I was and everything. And I would pick up that first bite and the physical, that's when I understood what the physical craving was, because once I picked up that, I took that first bite, then I just couldn't stop. I was off and running and I couldn't stop. And it was things like I would come home from work and I would, instead of going home, I would go straight where I lived in the village. Where I lived, there was a convenience store and there was a takeaway and all the rest of it. So what I would do is I was going to the takeaway and order my takeout food. And then I would go into the convenience store and order, get a couple of multi-bags of whatever I could get my hands on, multi-bags of, you know, the little bars and things like that. And I used to say, well, I'm going to go on a binge, I might as well get pissed as well. So I used to reach for the bottle of wine. This is the only fellowship I'm in, but it's where that my head took me. And it could have been I had a bad day at work, or I had, you know, had an argument with my husband or something. I reacted, my reaction to life was I just reached for the food. And I didn't think I had a particular trigger food, because I would reach for the carbs, I would reach for the sugar, I would reach for anything. So I used to come home, and what I found myself doing, now I had three children, I have a husband who works away, and like any other addict, my fix came before my kids. My kids were young and I would leave them in the house at the under the age of 14, and I would go out and I would go and get my fix. I would come back. They hadn't been fed. I had a 13-year-old that was making sandwiches for his two wee brothers while I was out getting my fix. And I would go in and I would, it was quick as I could get them out the kitchen. Yeah, here you go, have some stuffing. And away they went. And I remember in one of my worst binges, the food had fallen onto the off the table, onto the floor. And I was eating with my hands and shoving food in with my hands. But what happened was I got the multi-bag of whatever it was, put the bag down. So I was eating the takeaway food with my hands and ramming the chocolate into my mouth at the same time. So nothing, wasn't even touching the sides. There were nights where I could end up with my stomach so distended, and I was in such a, is that me, 5 minutes? And I was in a food coma, and I would be reaching for more and reaching for more. And that's when I became bulimic as well. I began to develop bulimic behaviours. I didn't like vomiting. So what I did was I took some laxatives. But unfortunately, what ended up happening was, is there were days when I wouldn't binge because I became a health addict, I became an exercise addict, a junkie on exercise. So I knew every diet, especially detox, I knew every diet under the sun, what to do for this or for that. And what would happen was there were times when maybe I wouldn't binge, but I would still be reaching for laxatives. So I would be, I became addicted to that as well. When I was asked to come and talk tonight, to share tonight on, you know, a piece of literature and stuff, one of the things that I found that I had to do was, I realised very early on when I came into OA that one of the things you had to do was get sober. And to get sober, I had to put down whatever was building on that craving to binge. But I knew the problem started off in my head, and I didn't know how, but once I started it, I didn't know what to do. When I was reading the book, I was looking through the big book, or the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's a part in it where it talks about that we're restless, irritable and discontented unless I can experience a sense of ease and comfort which comes by taking a few drinks. When I was restless, irritable and discontent, the only way I could get ease and comfort was by reaching for that, because it was all going on in my head and I had to reach for that food. And it gets repeated over and over again. They talk about it, just once they've succumbed to the desire, then they pass through the stage of it, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree. So that phenomena of craving, can't explain where the craving comes from, it's just this phenomena of craving. And I used to just keep going. You wake up the next morning completely remorseful, saying, right, that's it. You know, every day I was starting again, and by 11 o'clock I was off and running. So you can understand that I felt such a hatred for myself, because I was like a bad person trying to be good, and instead of an ill person trying to get well. And my success or failure in life depended on whether I'd binged that day or not, and what the scales told me. Now, I came into OA, I didn't wear my addiction, but that was only because of the amount of laxatives that I took and the amount of exercise that I was addicted to. Do you know what I mean? Because I used to do an exercise. The times I would vomit was because I would exercise to the point, I would exercise to a point that would make me vomit. But it wasn't like, look at her, she's an athlete. It was to induce a vomit so that I could then go back and carry on binging. So it was all part of my overall addiction. And that was repeated over and over. And it says here that unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope for my recovery. And I remember when I first came into OA and they talked about this. They talked about the mental obsession, they talked about the physical allergy, and then they talked about this thing about the spiritual malady. And I never knew what the spiritual malady was, but what I did know was that I was lost, that I didn't fit in anywhere, and that there was almost like this darkness hanging over me that I couldn't get rid of. There was a heaviness that really, really deep inside me, I couldn't get rid of that heaviness. And when it talks in the, there's a part in the big book here when it talks about the and the spiritual mandate, it feels that something more than human power is needed to produce that psychic change. Now, I grew up in a traditional faith, and I took my first compulsive bite when I was a 19-year-old nun. I was in a convent. I was a nun. I should have known what so a psychic change and spirituality was all about. And yet I could not stop binging. When I came into OE, I started off on the steps and whatever, and my problem was that pretty new and everything like that. The one thing that I found in this programme was the honesty that is kind of demanded if you're willing to make that step towards recovery. It suggests rigorous honesty, and that's the one thing I couldn't be. I couldn't be honest enough, so I relapsed. I couldn't be honest enough. I lost my sponsor and I relapsed. Probably a couple of years ago, what happened was in the summer of 2013, I knew I had to come back, and I never really quite stopped going to OE, but I was kind of in the periphery of OE. So I came back and I found another sponsor, and this time my sponsor said to me, first things first, you need a food plan. Because it talks about in the big book that one of the first things you have to do is put down the drink. You need to put it down, black and white. So for me, I had to put down what was... Once I came in, I admitted that I was powerless. The next thing I had to do, I had to get sober. I had to become food sober, because without sobriety, I can't walk the steps. And if I equate that with any other fellowship, how can I walk the steps if I'm still on my drug, still taking my fix? And it OE offers us recovery from compulsive eating on the three levels. This is the pamphlet's The Dignity of Choice. And the reason I talked about that is because I knew that I had to get a food plan. Now, I hadn't a clue what a food plan was about. I didn't know how to eat normally. So I had to learn. First thing was first, I had to find a structure to my food. I had to find a structure. And a plan of eating is one of the tools. But what it says here is that no matter how good our plan of eating is and how supportive our meetings and OE friends are, we experience lasting recovery only if we work the steps, the 12 steps. What I've found through working the programme, I've got 16 months abstinence of compulsive overeating, of bulimia and of laxative addiction and of excessive exercise. I put down the sugar. I've got abstinence of sugar from sugar products. I eat three meals a day. I eat nothing else in between. I have three meals a day. I calorie count. My calories are 1,700 calories because I'm on a maintenance plan. But I remember day one of my food plan, and my sponsor said to me, "Go and eat 1,700 calories." I said, "I can't find who." I started to think, "I can't find this amount of calories. Can't do it." Day one, and my sponsor says, "I detect a bit of rebellion in your voice." I went, "Yeah, but I can't do it." And she goes, "How far are you willing to go to recover?" I'm like, "Oh, God damn it." So she suggested sort of things in my to how to change and things, and that was fine. That was fine. What I've realised is that what the food plan did was give me a structure to my daily. I didn't know. I wouldn't eat anything until about 2 o'clock in the day, and then from 2 o'clock right through to midnight, I would start to compulsively overeat. Or binge. Sometimes I would eat right throughout the day, sometimes I would eat nothing, and I would go on almighty binges. My binges, I could eat up to, I'm surprised, I could eat 6,000 calories in one night. I now eat 1,700 calories a day. What it did to me physically, I have got problems physically because of my laxative abuse. I have issues around my stomach and my bowels. That's okay, it's what I did at the time. Once I put down the food, once I put down my trigger food, put down the sugar, I began to feel the feelings. And God, did that scare me. That scared me. When I first started feeling those feelings, I hadn't felt feelings for almost 30 years. And all of a sudden, I put down the sugar, I'm eating three meals a day, and I'm starting to feel stuff that I really didn't want to feel anymore. And I actually thought I was going to drown in my feelings. I was getting a tidal wave. I was like, I'm going to drown here. And what I did was I picked up the tools. I went to my meetings. I had my sponsor. And by God, I stuck to my food plan. And there were days when I just wanted to reach for that food and think, sod the food plan. I need to get rid of this. I don't like how I'm feeling. I don't want to feel this. But I stuck to that. But the tools are only part of it, because the programme is the 12 steps. It's the 12 steps as the programme of OA. And that's what I've discovered. And just even recently, as another fellow actually shared that at a recent meeting, that the meetings aren't the meetings isn't the programme. Food plan isn't the programme. Sponsorship's not the programme. The 12 steps are the programme. What the tools do, the 9 tools, help me to work my steps. So when I am feeling resentful, step 4 to 9. But step 4 to 9 is helped by me getting out my own head and texting out to a fellow. Steps 4 to 9 work for me by getting me out my own head, and I become a sponsor. And no matter what is going on, and no matter how resentful or how angry or how much self-pity I feel, I have the scaffolding of a food plan which provides me with structure. The night before, what my normal action plan is, I submit my food plan to my sponsor the night before, and then I forget about it. I got up the next morning, I check my phone, I use a food app to help me count calories. I check my phone, what am I having for breakfast? Right, I have my breakfast. It's forgotten about. I move throughout my day. I eat no less than 3 and no more than 5 hours a day. By lunchtime, I check my phone again, because I got me only like a sieve. Because of where I work, I usually have my packed lunch, so I have my packed lunch, and I've got my food in front of me, and I eat it, and then I forget it. And if I start feeling a bit ropey an hour or 2 hours after I'm eating, knowing that I've eaten enough calories to sustain me to dinner time, because I've eaten my breakfast and my lunch, 2 hours later I'm thinking, I want to eat something. I'm like, I text a sponsor, I go and phone a fellow, I do something. Because if I'm wanting to eat, if I'm craving food, before my 3 hours or whatever, less than 3 hours after I've eaten, I know that there's something going on in my head. And that's the one thing. One of the things I have learned in this programme as well is that I look in a mirror and I still see a fat person looking back. I've never been, I've never worn my disease. I've always been, you know, reasonably like small. But what this programme has done has released something like 100 pounds from my head. 3 weeks ago, I'll just share this with you. 3 weeks ago, I almost lost my abstinence. And the reason I almost lost my abstinence is because, quite simply, I stopped working the steps. There was a part of me that I have never shared with anyone, and it came back to bite my ass. And for about 3 or 4 months, I was consumed with guilt and remorse over past behaviours that I hadn't got rid of in my steps 4 to 9. And I began to fall away from the programme. My commitment to the fellowship is that I attend 2 meetings a week. I was only going down to 1 meeting. There were nights when I thought, can I be bothered? I'll not bother going to any meetings. Started falling away bit by bit. I wasn't contacting my sponsor. I wasn't doing a step 10. I was starting to fall away. And then one night I was out, and I wasn't committing my food plan the same as well. My food plan, I was still abstinent, thank God. It saved my life, because it was right at that moment, all I had was my food plan, because in all other ways, I was almost like a dry drunk. The only thing I was sober. I wasn't in a programme, I was sober. I had food sobriety, and that was all I had, nothing else. And then one night, I had been out with my family, and I almost picked up. One of my behaviours was I used to eat off my kids' plates and things. And we were sitting and I wanted to reach for was about to reach for it, and I thought, something's wrong here. And I knew exactly what it was. And I started, is that me? And what happened was I got the fright of my life. And I suddenly realised that I was right on, like, the edge of the abyss, because I had let go of my programme, completely let go of my programme. Got in touch with my sponsor, hadn't been in touch with her for a while, got in touch with her. And I realised that what I was holding on to, I had to get rid of. This programme suggests rigorous honesty. And I can tell you now that at that moment, in that moment of desperation, when I almost picked up, I suddenly became bloody honest with my sponsor. And the stuff that I had held on to for years, I got rid of. And I went back to step four. And I did a step four right through to step nine, and I worked it right through. And tonight, I can sit here and say, yes, today I'm in recovery because I worked my programme. And I do what the steps suggest. And like I say, this programme, what I needed through the dignity of choice, it's not about how many calories I'm eating. It's not about whether it's three meals a day. Everybody has a different food plan. People are diabetic. People have got different health issues. Some people can do it. I didn't need outside help to put a food plan together. Other people need to go to the doctors, the dietitians, and that's good. That's right. But for me and from my experience is that it's only part of it. Attending meetings you will not get recovery by attending meetings. I will not be recovered by attending meetings. I will not be in recovery just because I eat three meals a day and I put down the sugar. I will not be recovered just by being a sponsor. My recovery comes through the 12 steps, and part of the tools is my dignity of choice, and part of my tools is my food plan. And what it has done, it has lifted the mental obsession of my obsession around food and about what am I going to eat today. I know exactly what I'm going to eat tomorrow, because in my head I'll put my food plan down tonight, I'll submit it, and I forget it. So if anything else is going on in my head, at least the one thing I don't have to worry about is what I'm eating that day. So I hope I've kind of made some sense. I am so grateful today to OA. I tried to take an overdose 20 years ago because I couldn't cope with compulsive overeating. I was a compulsive overeater. The binging and I was so out of control with my food. I wanted to die. And I have to say today, OA saves my life daily. The steps save my life, and having a structure around my food, having the tools of the programme, and having a fellowship, and recognising that there is something greater than me that can take me from the insanity of the disease to the sanity of serenity and recovery. And it's not easy. It's not easy, but it can be done. And welcome, and to the newcomer, just keep coming back. But you're loved and you're accepted here, and right now you might be in a place where you feel you can't recover, but you can, you know, and you'll be supported. You're never through it alone, and that's the great thing about the fellowship. You will never ever be alone again, and you'll never ever need to isolate yourself or do it in secret again, you know, and that's the beauty of this programme. So thanks for letting me share.
Thanks. Well done.